broadcasting live from atop the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right. Happy to have you along, my fellow Americans. Sam Bushman and Kirk Crosby live on your radio. Hard-hitting news the networks refuse to use, no doubt, starts now. This is the broadcast for September the 15th in the year of our Lord, 2020. This is our one of two, and our goal always to protect life, liberty, and property, and to promote God, family, and country on your radio in the traditions of our founding fathers. Yes, indeed, ladies and gentlemen, we use the blueprint for liberty, the supreme law of the land, the Constitution for the United States of America as our guide. And absolutely, we're convinced the checks and balances brilliantly put in place by the founding fathers. That is one of the peaceful, restorative solutions we have at our fingertips today, by the way. And as you know, we reject revolution. We stand for peaceful restoration of the greatest country on the face of the earth. Welcome to Liberty Roundtable Live, lovingliberty.net. Spread the word, tell the tale. Donate if you have the heart to help as well. All right, we have an esteemed guest with us today. His name is Doug Weed. And Doug Weed has been around for a long time in politics. He's a writer. He's a political commentator. He's got, 11 books, I think, to his credit. He's been involved with many, many presidents. And his claim to fame are quite interesting. We'll dig in right now. Doug Weed, welcome to Liberty Roundtable Live, sir.
Hey, thank you, Sam. Great to be with you and Kurt.
You know, you've been around. One of your claims to fame is you've kind of been involved with many of the presidents, right?
Yeah, I've gotten to know five of them very personally and very well, been in their homes, and they've in many cases been in my home, traveled with them, and I've met six of them, interviewed six of them.
Now, tell me about these men, because they come from extremely different positions on one hand. When they're running for office, we think they're completely polar opposites, but over time, you know, we find them hanging out together and stuff. What's up with all that, Doug?
Yeah, interesting, Sam. A couple thoughts come to mind when you ask that. One, I've tried to find the common denominators. Each of them I've asked at different times of interviews, what's your secret to success? And they contradicted each other. One would say my secret is, Jimmy Carter. He said I had a complete plan, a thorough plan, step-by-step, meticulous, and I didn't deviate it.
Now, hold on. Now, this is Jimmy Carter, right?
Jimmy Carter.
This is the guy that they made fun of in the media, but at the same time, this guy had the most meticulous plan of anybody?
Well, it's what he said each step of the way. And I asked George H.W. Bush, and he said, if I'd had a plan, I wouldn't be where I am right now. So he went by the seat of his pants, although he's a very deliberate person. But the one common denominator, Sam, that I concluded from myself is I noticed, and it surprised me, all six of them are great listeners, and that includes Donald Trump. People are surprised when they meet Donald Trump, get into a conversation with him, what a great listener is. He asks questions and keeps his mouth shut. It's very interesting.
Well, that is very interesting. And what about Bill Clinton, though, and some of these guys, though? They just seem to be so extreme in their agenda. I mean, Hillary literally melted down when she wasn't elected and stuff like that. There's been a lot of books, a lot of things written about them. I don't really want to go off on a tangent about them, but was Bill surprising to you? I mean, the guy is very smart.
You know what? I didn't meet Bill Clinton, but I've been told by people who have that he's very outgoing and very charming, but I've never met him.
You have no idea how charming I am, Doug. You just don't have any idea, do you? All right, let's talk about a couple of things, because things have changed significantly over the years you've been in politics and as a commentator. You know, when you started out, people had their differences of opinion. They came from different sides of the aisle. But there's, for the most part, genuine respect for one another, right?
Yeah. And
civility is kind of what I'm speaking of.
Yes, there was a measure of civility. There was pretend civility. I remember in the Reagan years, for example, the news media would bracket his speech before he came on. They'd tell you why this is going to be false, and the president says this, but this is the reality. And then after he gave his speech, they'd take 30 minutes to tell you, well, this was totally misleading. And this. So the media was always hostile because it had its own agenda, but never as hateful as it is today. I mean, today you have a New York Times reporter claiming that the First Lady was once a prostitute. You never had anything like that. A journalist like that would be fired immediately by the New York Times for a false story.
And I bring that up for a reason, because things have changed in terms of the civility. You could say it's pretend civility, or you could say at least it's enough respect to say, hey, you know what, we're in the public eye and we better behave decently to one another. Nowadays, it seems like all the gloves are off. And the reason that I bring that up as I do is because I got an email from your people that basically said, hey, Sam, here's an update for my friends. And I consider myself one of your friends. I've watched Doug Weed for a long time, loved his articles and his columns, and we'll get to his books in just a minute. But it says, here's an update for my friends. Why haven't you seen me on TV lately? Answer, censorship is getting severe. We haven't seen that change either. They're even censoring the President of the United States, Doug.
Yeah, it's amazing. I heard an interview with Kamala Harris saying that the president should not be allowed to have his Twitter account. I thought, man, if the president of the United States doesn't have free speech, what hope do I have? And it is getting remarkable. My book, Inside Trump's White House, is published by the second largest publisher in the world, but they will not allow them to advertise on Twitter, because they consider the book to be pro-Trump. It's just interviews. It's interviews with President Trump, with Ivanka, with Jared, with Tiffany, and Laura, Don Jr., and Eric. It's just interviews over and over with Trump, but they consider it pro-Trump because it doesn't attack him. So that's where we are today. And I'll get book reviews sent to me, and they'll say, I posted this book review, and it was rejected. It wasn't allowed.
Now, where do we go from here? Dennis Prager and others are suing over this. Donald Trump has mentioned about libel laws and slander and censoring and different things. So have several of the conservative congressmen and senators and such. It seems like at some point you can say, well, hey, Twitter or Facebook or some of these places are private institutions or private entities or businesses. At the same time, they've garnered so much power, so much big tech authority, if you will, to where they're almost unstoppable. Can they just shut you down like that and get away with it? Or do we need to sue like Dennis Prager? What's your take on that?
Well, I don't know. It's pretty far down the road. I mean, my YouTubes are throttled. I'm sure you're familiar with that, and shadow banned. And I can with using their own analytics, I can show a YouTube that's getting 4,000 views a day for a year and a half, and then on one exact day, bam, it drops to 4 and remains at 4. My daughter will post a YouTube, and it'll get like a couple hundred views, and right after it comes out, a few hours later, the same YouTube will say 120 views. So they're literally subtracting them from the count. So I don't know. It's a dilemma, and it's a little worse than most people think, because it's owned by the monopolies, and that's driven by money, and that's fed by government. So the only person who's had the guts to take it on has been Donald Trump. I don't know that anybody else would do it. It wouldn't be advised. It wouldn't be wise.
Yeah, Dennis Prager and a few people are trying, but they just get smashed, Doug.
Yep, they do. And again, it's the huge monopolies. They're making their money. They all have their deals with China. A large portion of their income comes from China. And that's why you see all the attacks on Russia. Strategically, we cannot take on Russia and China at the same time. So the big monopolies puff the threat from Russia and diminish the threat from China, who is their economic ally. It's a dilemma. And the big monopolies own the media. And it doesn't matter whether a Republican gets elected president or a Democrat, unless it's an outlier like Trump, who just released the small businessmen and deregulated. Any normal Republican president will play along with that and work with the monopolies and make sure they get their money. And they do get their money. They get money from the Fed, as you're aware of. They use the Import-Export Bank. They get stimulus bills that are passed that exempt them from the regulations that are earlier passed to keep all the small businesses out. And you notice COVID-19, Sam, they shut down the small businesses. Kmart and Target and Costco, or I'm sorry, Walmart, they're all going strong. The monopolies go strong.
It's a sad tale to tell now. As you've been in close contact with five of the American presidents, met six of them, which one stands out as the one that you believe is real? Not in it for power and control, but real. Is it really Donald Trump?
It's really Donald Trump. No question in my mind. Nobody even comes close. I mean, he blew up NATO and he rebuilt it. He blew up NAFTA and he rebuilt it. He's gutsy. I mean, if you and I were in there advising him, we would sure tell him to cool it. We would slow him down. But Ivanka and Don Jr. tell me as little children, they'd play under his desk at Trump Tower, and he'd be cutting the morning newspaper out and carefully filing those newspaper articles. This is before the internet. He was just so upset with what was happening to America.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking to Doug Weed. He's a writer, a political commentator. He's written 11 books. His latest, Inside Trump's White House, he was there. DougWeed.com for more. You can't get it from the mainstream because they've done their best to shut him down. But if we all go to DougWeed.com, hopefully we can circumvent him. Back in seconds with Doug Weed.
The Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit legal foundation committed to protecting our unalienable right to publicly acknowledge God. The Foundation for Moral Law exists to restore the knowledge of God in law and government and to acknowledge and defend the truth that man is endowed with rights not by our fellow man, but by God. The Foundation maintains a twofold focus. First, litigation within state and federal courts. Second, education. Conducting seminars to teach the necessity and importance of acknowledging God in law and government. How can you help? Please make a tax-deductible contribution, allowing foundation attorneys to continue the fight. You may also purchase various foundation products as well at morallaw.org. Located in Montgomery, Alabama, the Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit, tax-exempt 501c3, founded by Judge Roy Moore. Please partner with us to achieve this important mission. morallaw.org.
Transport back in time to our nation's founding at the Freedom's Light Festival. Visit with freedom fighters, colonial artisans, music, contests, prizes, over 35 activities for the whole family. Schedule a school field trip and fulfill the federal requirement to teach the Constitution. Can you crack the spy codes used to win the Revolutionary War? Take home a founding document printed on the exact replica Isaiah Thomas used for the first Declaration of Independence. Register and compete in the Constitution Bowl. Join us September 17th through the 19th. Register at freedomslight.us. freedomslight.us. This event is completely free. Now more than ever, we need to ensure Freedom's Light is not extinguished. Let's keep this light shining in the hearts and minds of our children. freedomslight.us. That's freedomslight.us.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, Doug Weed with us. We're talking about his incredible book called Inside the Trump White House. We're talking about the reality of who this guy is. This guy, Doug Weed, has known five U.S. presidents. Well, I guess I should say known six, but known well five. And Donald Trump stands out head and shoulders above the rest. For one unique reason, he's real. Now, I want to point this out really quick, and then I want you to rock and roll telling us about inside the Trump White House and who's who, etc. But there's an interesting kind of a tidbit that I got from WorldNet Daily, believe it or not, WND.com. It's an article from Chuck Norris. And the Chuck Norris interview, or the Chuck Norris article basically says two presidents who were not supposed to win. And he talks about Ronald Reagan, number one, and Donald Trump, number two. And then he goes on to speak very favorably about President Trump. He's known Trump since 1974 and basically has followed his career ever since. And so Chuck Norris speaking out. But the point that I'm getting at is Chuck would agree with you that Ronald Reagan and Donald Trump, two of the presidents that weren't supposed to win, and then Donald Trump being the favorite and probably the most real of them all. Doug?
Yeah, you know, you and I were on the radio several months ago when my book first came out. And since then, several people who've read the book and seen some of the stories, the president telling some of these stories, real without being rewritten by media. And I was contacted by someone who in Afghanistan ran an IT company, told me an interesting story. The president had come in office, and the Pentagon was reviewing with him the budget for the war in Afghanistan. And they were going through the numbers, and the president reached a huge figure and was outraged. What's this? And they said, sir, this is the Afghan army, but why so much money? Because we pay their salaries, sir. We pay the salaries of the Afghan army? Yes, sir. There's 200,000 soldiers in the Afghan army. We pay the salary of every one, and that's good, because we can tell them how to train, make sure they're well-trained, and where to go, and when to fight. And it's our army. Instead of sending our boys out to fight, this is our army. And the president paused, and he said in this story, what's their names? Pardon me, sir? What's their names? The names? Well, there's 200,000 soldiers, sir. Well, give me one name of one of these soldiers. Okay, sir. We will run an audit for you of these soldiers, and we'll get a report back to you. So the IT firm set it up in Afghanistan. They ran an audit, and after their first pass, they found that 100,000 soldiers in the Afghan army did not exist. They were ghost soldiers. That was money going down a rat hole. 6 years of the Bush administration, 8 years of the Obama administration. I spoke with the man in Afghanistan who ran that audit. I spoke with an IG in the Pentagon saying, could this story possibly be true? And he laughed and said, I wouldn't be surprised if it's more than 100,000 soldiers that don't exist. This is something that is unusual, that isn't normally found. This is the type of a president who questions everything, gets outraged at everything, and doesn't like wasted money, and isn't afraid to take on the powers that be, whether they're in the deep state or they're in corporate global big monopolies.
All right, let's talk about the president's family.
Because Sam, real quick, do you mind if we ask him real quick about the Israel embassy thing? Do you know that story, Doug?
Yes, and it's so fascinating. I write about it in detail in the book and reveal things that have never been revealed. I asked Jared about it, and he was assigned on day one. Given, you know, solve the Middle East. So this was what they learned. I asked this question, Kurt. I asked, how come six presidents before you promised to move the embassy out of Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, and all of them broke their promise? I mean, George W. Bush actually was so mad at Bill Clinton, he said, I'm going to do it on day one, the first day that I'm president of the United States. And he didn't do it in 8 years. So obviously, I said to the president, there's something you learned when you became president that they didn't know before they were president. What did you learn, and how did you overcome it? He said, well, as soon as I became president, I was told if we moved the embassy, there would be a war in the Middle East. I got a call from Emmanuel Macron, don't move the embassy. 100,000 people will die in the Middle East. I got calls from Erdogan in Turkey saying there will be a war. It will be horrendous, and tens of thousands of children will die. And again, the figure, 100,000 people will perish in a war if you move that embassy. But Trump concluded two things. There are two things every president wants in the Middle East. Number one, they want peace in the Middle East. Number two, they wanted to move the embassy, a more tactical thing, to Jerusalem. So he said, you know, they never get it. They never move the embassy because they're afraid if I do that, I won't get peace. So those are the two things the president wants. I'm going to move the embassy. I'll get one of them. And then who knows? Maybe I'll get the other one, too. I can always move it back. So they moved the embassy, and there was not a war in the Middle East.
In fact, I would submit to you there's more peace.
Yeah, that's the obvious point. It looks like he's going for the second one, too. So that's how Donald Trump is different than six presidents before him who all promised the same thing and didn't do it.
Now,
is it true they told him it was going to cost $1 billion and he did it for like 500 grand?
I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised. That sounds typically Trump to me. As you know, with NATO, he blew up NATO, rebuilt it, and gained $90 billion. Now, can you tell me if Joe Biden's elected president, is the national media going to say, okay, refund Germany all their money so they can build high-speed railways? This is terrible what Trump did. Let's give back all these people their money. I don't think so.
Well, that's pretty much all the questions I had about that. Thank you, Sam, for letting me interrupt there.
All right, let's talk about Donald Trump's family a little bit, because this is one of the most, in my opinion, impressive things about a billionaire businessman. You know, usually their families are melting down. Usually they don't have relationships with their children. You know, President Trump has a relationship with his children. He isn't perfect. I'm not going there. I'm just saying, you know what? His children are impressive, sir.
Yeah, Sam, I was blown away. First of all, how well they got along with each other. You usually find a little rift here or there. But no. And the ladies, the Trump women are gorgeous. They all color coordinate for events. They text each other every day. The Trump family texts each other. They're talking all day long by text. Did you read this? Did you see this? How are you doing? Keep your chin up. And they protect each other. And that was something that came to me unexpected. I was used to the families of other first families where there's pretty deep and understandable rivalries and misunderstandings. I didn't find that. Maybe it's the outside persecution and harassment that makes them unite.
All right. I interviewed Donald Trump Jr. and Eric Trump both, and they told stories about growing up and learning to work, having to drive a tractor or do this or that and different things. And you read Donald Trump Jr.'s book called Triggered, and you begin to understand this guy can't make this stuff up. He grew up, even though he was very wealthy, and he doesn't apologize or doesn't back away from that, but he grew up a lot like me and you, Doug. I mean, he grew up, you know, playing as a kid, and, you know, he traveled and packed up his truck and took off and, you know, like a young college student and different things. And for a rich guy, he's lived a pretty amazing, normal, in the trenches life. That's his son. You don't see that stuff, Doug. You just don't.
Yeah, it's interesting. One of my favorite stories is little Eric is 5 years old, and they're living in New York, and he's going to go to a neighbor's apartment to play, and he's getting ready to leave the apartment, the Trump apartment, and Donald Trump comes running to the front door, slams the door shut, and towering over his little son, he looks down at him and says, before you leave, no smoking, no drinking, and no drugs. And little Eric says, okay, Pop. And then he leaves. That was the family mantra.
Well, when we come back, I want to talk about this more with Doug, because that's how President Trump has lived his life. And I submit to you, that's a great key to his success. You know, they say Donald Trump runs off the rails, but you know what? He doesn't drink, he doesn't smoke, he doesn't do drugs. He sets an example there, too. The mainstream press will never give him credit for it now. Quick pause. Doug Weed in seconds. DougWeed.com. You are listening to Liberty Roundtable Live.
Proclaiming liberty across the land. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
The death toll from Western wildfires is nearing 40, with most of those deaths in California. But 8 people are dead and dozens are missing in Oregon as well. Officials there say 50 people are unaccounted for, 22 of them confirmed as missing. President Trump viewed some of the fire devastation in California yesterday and called for better forest management to reduce the risk of fires. Hurricane Sally heading towards landfall on the Gulf Coast, although it's weakened from a Category 2 storm to a Cat 1, but still, millions are at risk from storm surge and flooding. Louisiana Governor John Bel Edwards.
I submitted a request for a pre-landfall emergency declaration to the White House. That declaration has been signed by the president.
Forecasters say some parts of the Gulf Coast could get 20 to even 30 inches of rain from the storm. And you're listening to USA Radio News.
Are you interested in making $10, $20, even $40,000 a month flipping houses? Then listen to this exciting opportunity. Jeremy Isles and Tony Rosenblum, founders of High Impact Outcomes, are ready to show you how they have helped first-time investors flip hundreds of houses in 39 states for substantial profits. What's their secret, you ask? Just text HURRY to 72000 right now, and they'll send you a free copy of their 40K formula flip kit. See how using their innovative strategies with the right internet search tools can help you create off-market deals that realtors and other investors don't even know existed. Text HURRY to 72000 now to get your free 40K formula flip kit and get ready to see how fast you can receive your first or next real estate paycheck. Text HURRY to 72000 right now to get your 40K formula flip kit plus free tickets to a live interactive online training class. Text HURRY to 72000. That's text HURRY to 72000 for your free 40K flip kit now. They can't wait to see you there. Individual results may vary.
A marina packed in Harrison Township, Michigan last night for a re-election rally for President Trump, where his son Donald Jr. addressed the crowd and Kid Rock performed. A Trump supporter, Tom Kennedy, was there.
I could actually sit down with Donald Trump today and have a beer, and he wouldn't make me feel uncomfortable.
A federal judge ends protections for some foreigners who've been legally working in the U.S. Here's USA Radio's John Hunt.
A U.S. appeals court decided President Donald Trump can phase out protections for hundreds of thousands of families that have been living and working legally in the United States for many decades. The 2-1 ruling by the California-based Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals lifted a block of Trump's ending of the temporary protected status for more than 300,000 individuals. The administration could expel from the country people from Sudan, Nicaragua, and Haiti as early as March 2021, and El Salvadorians by November of 2021.
USA Radio News.
Wow, if that doesn't typify irony, I don't know what does. The bottom of the hour news. we go right into the break saying Donald Trump doesn't drink, doesn't smoke. We're talking to Doug Weed, ladies and gentlemen, best-selling author, Inside the Trump White House, his book, DougWeed.com. Check it out. It's the only way you can get his stuff. The censoring is becoming too great out in the mainstream, if you will. But anyway, it's ironic. We're talking about President Trump not drinking. At the bottom of the hour, they have this guy that's a Trump supporter, and the guy's like, yeah, I can sit down and drink a beer with old Donald. I wouldn't feel uncomfortable at all. And my response is, you're right. Donald probably wouldn't make you feel uncomfortable, and he'd probably have a great time, but he wouldn't drink a beer with you. He might get some other non-alcoholic, water or some other drink, right? But it's kind of ironic, huh, Doug?
Yeah. I sat down with him for dinner, and we had he had a diet Coke, I think it was.
Well, and this guy goes on the campaign trail, and they make fun of him because he doesn't go out to fancy restaurants, even though he could go out to any restaurant he wants, right?
Yeah. It's interesting. On this occasion, though, we had dinner in the Oval Office. We had it back. I describe it in my book. We went down the Monica Lewinsky corridor and back into this private dining room.
I'm glad you're on my side.
And behind the Oval Office. And he had a steak. We both had steaks, and it was great. It was Ruth Chris, great steak.
Well, I'll tell you what, man, I went to Washington, D.C. to the Trump Hotel, and some friends bought me a nice steak there. And I'm telling you, Donald Trump's kitchens know how to make steak, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, he's an interesting character. I was watching during this COVID-19, I was watching some old history shows about Henry VIII, and I thought at the time, you know, that Donald Trump is so colorful. In 300 years, they're still going to be coming back to him and tapping the comments and the ideas and the gall he's had to overthrow these powerful monopolies. The kids tell me when they were just young and under his desk, he'd clip out the newspaper. He was just so frustrated, first with Japan and the trade deficit with Japan, and then with China. He just felt like America was so ignorant to what was happening. The vast transfer of wealth, billions of dollars of wealth from the American middle class, which in many cases has descended into poverty in many cities in America. And that's what it's taken to rise these beautiful, luxurious new cities in China. It's taken that transfer of wealth. We had to give it up to make China great.
All right. I want to point out something interesting. The mainstream press is like, yeah, Donald's holed up in the White House. He's all afraid of his own shadow. And he's sitting there just watching Fox News and drinking his Coke. He doesn't do much all day long. And then I dig into the news and I find out, oh, he went and visited the troops. They were delighted to see him. He came back and put something in place to get rid of 8 regulations for every new law that comes out. So we're, you know, kind of backing that off. And he did this. And I go, wait a minute. We're not even talking the same planet discussion, Doug.
Yeah, he's a very, very hard worker. He gets 4 or 5 hours of sleep a night. And he's up early. You can see that from his tweets. And he's up late. And he loves this country. He's been training to be president all his life. I had people on staff describe to me day one in the White House. They said he wanted to do everything. They had a big meeting in the Oval Office. He wanted to destroy ISIS on the first day. He wanted jobs for America the first day. He wanted everything done immediately. He didn't want to waste. And he's a pretty amazing guy. He's a character, and controversial as a character. But I told him I think that that will actually attract more attention historically and work to his favor. His story.
There's no doubt about it. Do you think he has been surprised at how deep the swamp really is? Because I know, you know, when you go there, you realize there's a swamp and you know it's bad. But when you get there, you just like. Ooh.
Yeah, I asked him that very question, Sam. I said, is it as bad as you thought? And he immediately responded, it's worse. It's worse. It's far, far, far worse. That was his response.
What about him being a Christian? Is it real? Is it genuine? Some are saying he's a baby Christian. Some are saying it's just a farce. I find it as real as it can get. And the examples that I would give is he had more prayers at the presidential inauguration than any president I can remember. From more walks of life, more different faiths than anybody I know. He stood up for religious freedom and pro-life time and time and time again. For a big money guy that's had swamp monsters as his friends and who have had pro-abortion people around him his whole life, this guy's pretty bold and standing up like I've never seen in my lifetime, Doug.
It's very authentic, Sam. I worked the religious side of the street for the Bush family for 40 years. And we ran polls on public figures like Robert Shuler and others, who the president should be seen with. We went into great detail. There was a basketball star, the Admiral of the Houston Rockets, who was a born-again Christian. And we'd make sure he was seen in pictures with the president. But we were very careful of the words that the president would use. Everything was calculated. Thousands of pages of memorandum, we go over it. Trump doesn't do that. Obviously, he doesn't do that. He wouldn't pick as his religious friend Paula White. He would run the numbers, and he'd pick a Southern Baptist, and it'd be totally different than it is. But the fact is, 20 years ago, he was in Trump Tower. He was in despair, missing his father deeply, and he was flipping through the TV channels. He watched Christian television. And he saw Paula White on there, and he was impressed with her positive message. He missed Norman Vincent Peale that he grew up on. His dad used to take him to that church. He missed that. And that's who he got in contact with. It's a genuine story. I asked the president, please send me a list of people you want me to interview. I wanted to interview the cabinet, all these people. I kept asking for the list, and Sarah Huckabee Sanders wouldn't get it to me. And finally, in exasperation, I said, please send me, tell the president, send me a name of someone he wants me to talk to. And finally, I got back this list that had one name, Paula White. And that was the preacher that he listened to on Sunday morning.
Does he understand Christian principles? Is he a baby Christian? Is he well along in his faith? And the reason I ask this question is because they make fun of him as if he's completely ignorant. And I think he has a deeper Christian faith than most understand. And the willingness to double down for pro-life, in my mind, proves it.
Yeah, there's no question about it. Many times, conservatives and religious leaders have met with him during the campaign and then after the campaign, and they would say, how do we know you're going to keep your promise with Supreme Court judges? We've had this before. They had it with the president I worked in the White House for, George H.W. Bush, and we had a conservative we appointed to the Supreme Court, and then we appointed a liberal, Judge Souter. That's what Republicans do. They give a free one to the Democrats, and when they had these meetings, Trump would just laugh, and he'd say, you'll see, you'll see, you'll see. And, of course, he's kept his word. There's no question that it's genuine, and there's no question that it's raw, that it's untrained, untutored, that it's spontaneous and real, his faith.
Which means it's vintage Donald J. Trump. Right?
Yeah, it's personal. There's no question.
All right, let's talk about the election. I believe that Donald Trump, and my co-host believes this, he's been kind of more bullish on it than I have even. I believe President Trump will win in a landslide coming up in November, accepting that they commit flat-out vote fraud. Doug, will they do that? Will they commit vote fraud to that level, or will Trump win in a landslide?
Well, you know, it's interesting that you bring that up, because vote fraud does exist and has existed, as you know. I mean, I'm looking at my bookshelf right now, and I can pull out dozens of books with stories now documented of voter fraud. I mean, I've got a whole two or three shelves of books on the Kennedys where they talk about it, where they quote Joe Kennedy, and conversations on the phone with Mayor Daley in Chicago the night of the election, holding back ballots and creating more ballots in some precincts that had more votes than they had people. And so it does exist. We know that the West Virginia primary with Hubert Humphrey, that the mafia played a part with the unions. We now know that's a true story. And part of the reason it's public and known to history is because Humphrey was an ultra-liberal himself. He was the happy warrior. So it was a liberal cheating another liberal, and so that story has been told. We can see in Iowa what happened in this election cycle to Bernie Sanders, and that's happened before. That happened to the Republicans 4 years before when Rick Santorum won the Iowa caucus. So, yes.
I know we're supposed to let you go, Doug. Can you stay with me 5 more minutes?
Yep, I can.
All right, hold on. I got a quick break. Doug Weed with us, ladies and gentlemen. Best-selling author. Trump surrogate, telling the truth about inside the Trump White House. That's his book. It's being censored. We're here to tell you the truth. Doug Weed in seconds.
Hi, I'm Patty, wife of former Congressman Steve Stockman. In Congress, Steve sought impeachment of Eric Holder for his corruption of the Justice Department and his fast and furious gun running that caused Border Agent Brian Talley's death. Steve called for arrest of Lois Lerner for her contempt of Congress as it investigated her targeting of conservative nonprofit groups. After 4 years, 4 grand juries, and millions of tax dollars, Steve Stockman is in prison. His case involved 4 checks to nonprofits. DOJ has one standard for Hillary Clinton, but another for folks like President Trump and my husband. We've spent all our savings, all Steve's retirement, and much of mine. Steve Stockman has fought for you and America. Won't you join me now to fight for Steve? To help, text FIGHT to 444-999. Text F-I-G-H-T to 444-999 or go to defendapatriot.com. Defendapatriot.com.
Your call is being transferred to the listening ear. Listening professionals dedicated to hearing you.
Hello, listening ear. Who am I listening to?
Carrie, but I was calling my mom.
Yes, you were, but your mom was so busy she felt it was important for you to have someone who could completely focus on listening to you and you alone. So she subscribed to our service. Go ahead, I'm listening.
Well, I'm not quite sure.
Where to start? Well, I can listen to school issues like science projects. I can listen to boy problems, although that's an extra $3 per call because of the emotional drain on me. How about we start with how you wish you had made cheerleader?
I didn't try out for cheerleader.
This isn't Mary?
Carrie. I'm Carrie.
Oh, sorry.
There is no substitute for a loving parent. And when you really listen, love is what they'll hear. From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, for more tips on strengthening your family, visit family.mormon.org.
All right, back with you live, ladies and gentlemen. Doug Weed, riding shotgun, political commentator and author. He's written 11 books. His latest, Inside the Trump White House, the real story of his presidency. Doug, you were talking about vote fraud. You're saying, hey, it's absolutely real.
Yeah, it's happened all through history. And we've seen it in both parties. We've seen it in primaries. Bernie Sanders has been cut out the last two times, and sure, they take care of him. It can happen. And it looks like right now that's a very real fear of President Trump.
What do you think is going to happen? Any predictions for us?
Well, I think there will be voter fraud. I don't know if the media will cover it, but, I mean, there wasn't the last one, the numbers you saw in California.
They won't cover it if it's real fraud, but if Donald wins, they'll claim fraud, right?
Yeah. Well, I saw a news story today in the Atlantic, I guess. One of the writers is getting a little backlash because he was saying that if Donald Trump wins, there will be riots in the street, and there's no question that it'll be voter fraud. So they're ready for that.
Yeah,
hey, look,
they accused Donald. They said that Donald shouldn't say that. He can't say that ahead of time, but they can.
Look, they accused him of being a Russian spy.
Well, the only one that had a deal with Russia was Hillary and the uranium, right?
It's just the most comical thing on earth. It's just the most far-fetched thing. I mean, Jared Kushner said if they'd have come up with something about building casinos in Atlantic City or building buildings with the cement unions in New York, the cement unions controlled by the mafia, people would have believed it. Instead, they say he's a Russian spy. I told the president, this is Jared, they couldn't have picked a better scandal to make up than this one because you're so clearly innocent.
All right. Do you think that President Trump will win in a landslide?
I don't think he'll win in a landslide. It doesn't look like it would be a landslide, but I know who I'm going to vote for.
Amen to that. All right. We know we don't have you forever. What do you want to tell us about President Trump? The most interesting thing, were there anything in your 2 years of interviewing the family that you went, oh, this isn't good, or this is scary, or this is a problem, or was there anything that you were disappointed about?
No, because the important issues were transcendent. Remember, I went in there having worked in the White House, having seen everything calculated, spy versus spy versus spy, 40 years in the Bush family and the Republican establishment. I came out blown away. To me, the mistakes he makes, the things he says that are outrageous, to me, those are insignificant compared to the transcendent issues that he has put America first. He's cleaning up the corruption in our foreign policy and in our domestic policy. And to me, that just transcends anything he says or does. I'm amazed at his courage.
When President Trump went down the escalator, I was pretty cynical. I'm like, well, you know, he's an outsider, but look, all of his friends are insiders forever. I was pretty skeptical. And as time's gone on, I've seen more and more and more evidence of a real man doing real things who truly does care about God, family, and country. And I know his life's not perfect, but I don't know how I'd handle his wealth and his fame and his lifestyle necessarily either. But to come out of it, you know, 70 plus years later, as a God-fearing, faith-filled Christian who does care about pro-life and who does care about his family and who does care about his country now, because he doesn't need to be president. He could just ride off into the sunset and hang out at all of his golf courses. Okay, there's something here that is unique, that's historically relevant, and most importantly, that relates to us for the future, Doug.
Sam, I feel exactly the same way. Exactly the same way. I mean, Bush bailed out the banks, and Obama bailed out Solyndra and his buddies. He and Biden bailed out their buddies. You're on our side. We'll give you money. Trump has bailed out the American people and the workers when this crisis hit. That's a good example, in my opinion. I think he's a perfect president for COVID-19 because he's not an ideologue in the sense that he is willing to use public money to address a crisis, was willing to put ventilators on war footing, and now we're an exporter of them, and he's willing to turn loose the private sector, which Obama never would, and allow, without FDA interference, those private labs to pursue a vaccine. I think he's perfect for this moment for America.
The only thing I think he needs to do is somehow he needs to cut his sons loose so they can start the Trump Media Network so we can take on these clowns that are literally censoring everybody, Doug.
It's scary. It's pretty tragic. It's pretty scary. Yep.
Is there a way to have conversations with President Trump about this? Because we've got to somehow stop this. What will it look like in 10 years? What will it look like for my children as they continue to come of age, and my grandchildren? What are things going to look like if we allow the censorship to continue?
Boy, it's dangerous. And I've made many trips to the former Soviet Union, and I've asked them questions, Sam, about what it was like. And the older generation is dying off, and then they're important people to talk to before they leave. And the thing that strikes me is they didn't know what they didn't know. That was the thing that impressed me. The books they weren't allowed to read, they didn't know what those books were. The movies they weren't allowed to see, they can't tell you which movies they weren't allowed to see because they didn't know what was available. But huge chunks of history taken out. I could tell you stories of some of the old people there. Huge blocks of world history that do not exist in their minds because it was purged in the Soviet Union. That's where we're headed in the United States. Orwell said that he who controls the past controls the future, and he who controls the present controls the past. That's the battle we're in this November. Who will control the present?
All right. Speaking of the battle, before I let you go, I got to highlight the blonde politician, Doug.
That's my outrageous, sarcastic daughter, and I have no control over her. She's very funny. She's very great. She gets online, and she makes these sarcastic videos, and it just pokes fun at the whole terrible process of what we're going through with the American left.
Now, she's on TV, right?
Yeah, she's on TV from time to time now, so I'm very proud of her. I pray for her safety. It's not easy going against the tide.
She won't listen to Doug, will she?
No, but she doesn't drink, and she doesn't smoke, and she doesn't do drugs.
And you tower over and say, Camille!
I don't have to. All right. Got it down.
There you go. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, the point is look for the blonde politician because she does some interesting stuff herself. And it's fun stuff. It's interesting stuff. And it brings a whole new kind of viewpoint to the vitriol and the lack of civility and the hate. And she brings a fresh side, Doug.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm proud of her.
All right, sir. Godspeed. We'll talk soon. Thanks, Doug.
Okay. Thank you, Sam. Thank you, Kurt.
Doug Weed, everybody. Kurt, you want to respond to Doug?
Well, it's just refreshing to hear and to in my opinion, to get some of the background that we've, you know, many of us have been able to garner as we dig and things, but, you know, he was right in there. Hey, good stuff, right?
I think it's great stuff. And here's the interesting thing about Doug. You know, he's a Republican's Republican, Kurt. Okay? And he, instead of being like the swamp monster Republicans, you would think he would be, because he's been around since, you know, whatever, so many presidents for years and years and years and years. Total normal Republican, if you will, it seems. In the Bush, you know, organization, whatever you want to call it, for 40 years kind of stuff. But here's the difference. The swamp monsters who, politics being the mother's milk of their success, so to speak, this guy simply says, I'm going to analyze the truth. I'm going to find out, and I'm going to write a book about it. So he goes into the Trump White House, and he interviews all kinds of people, all the children, the family members. Literally, he's given virtually carte blanche access to all the people. And in the end, he comes out with this book that says, you know what? The summary is this. Trump is the real deal. Now, believe it or not, Doug Weed is a friend of Ron Paul's and is very Ron Paul-esque as well, which is surprising that you can work in the George Bush White House kind of thing, but yet be Ron Paul friendly. I mean, that in and of itself is an anomaly. But I bring this up, Kurt, because it shows how real Doug Weed is and how real Donald Trump must be. I mean, what advantage does Doug Weed have to do that? You would say, well, to make money on his book. Whatever, the guy's written 11 books. The guy's worked in these high places for a long time. Money doesn't drive Doug Weed, and money doesn't drive Donald Trump, Kurt.
Well, that's very evident, I think, because, like you say, with his connections, he could certainly, you know, he could be a swamp monster. He could, you know, really be in there. I mean, you hear the story about the, you know, Israeli, the embassy there and his take on it, his, you know, understanding there and the president's response. It's refreshing. It's just nice to find that kind of guy that's been in there.
Right? Yeah, Doug Weed finishes and says, my bestseller, Inside the Trump White House, can't be advertised on Twitter. The president has tweeted about me 6 times, and the media ignores it. This book has the real inside story of Donald Trump, Melania, Jared, Ivanka, John Jr., Tiffany, Eric, all of them up close. And behind the scenes details. This guy has been there. And I'm just telling you right now, amazing that this guy wrote a book like this. And what's even more amazing, Kurt, they loved Doug Weed for decades in the media until he decided to tell the truth about Trump. Now they're censoring Doug Weed. I look at that and I go, this is beyond imagination. These people will stop at nothing, as President Trump has wisely warned us, Kurt.
Well, I think you're right, Sam, which is the main reason, you know, we've had such a change of, I guess you could say, a change of view on this whole thing. Neither one of us voted for the president last time. Yet now we come out pretty much as big-time supporters and promoters of the president.
Yeah, and I want to be very clear. It's not so much that our view has changed. It's that the circumstances have changed. We're not talking about a guy who's...
Well, we got the information.
Yeah, we got the information. That's right. We're not talking about a guy who walks down the escalator and says he'll stand up for pro-life. We're talking about a guy who has stood up for pro-life and taken serious, serious action to promote pro-life. That's what I mean by the circumstances have changed. Yes, our views change, but it's not just because we're flip-flopping. It's because things have become much more favorable and we have learned more and more and more of the truth. And the truth shall set you free. Thank you, Doug Weed. What a phenomenal hour. Hour 2 coming up in seconds. Sam Bushman and Kurt Crosby telling you, God save the Republic of the United States of America, we declare this nation shall endure.